Hello and welcome to QS Cast. Each week we take a look at the big stories in Magic Finance and give you the story on what's worth buying and selling. If you're subscribed to Quiet Speculation's Insider Service, you're hearing this podcast on Wednesday. If you're not already signed up, you had to wait till Friday to hear this. If you're not familiar with the Insider Service, head on over to quietspeculation.com and you'll find out about all the ways we can help you pay less money to play Magic. All right, we have an exciting show for you this week. We are going to be talking about a bunch of things, chiefly among them Grand Prix Pittsburgh. So we're going to be talking about the modern format, whether we think this top eight is representative of modern, and whether we think, therefore, that it's a healthy format or not. We're going to be looking at a lot of cards, like Jace and its impact in modern. We're going to be talking about the Bloom Titan deck. And Chaz has an actual budget deck for you guys in modern, if you want to talk about that, if you're ready to jump into the format. So, first of all, we wanted to chat about Grand Prix Pittsburgh, just in general. The event was taken down by a Jeskai Twin deck. I got Echoes of the Path. This was a big deck about 2 years ago. It used to run a lot more Wall of Omens back when birthing pod decks were still a thing because you'd have better defense against them. Chaz, do you remember this deck when it was floating around before?
I don't remember it quite often, but... You know, it's good to see it.
It is. Well, I mean, I'll explain it a little bit more if you're like Chaz and you don't really remember it. It had the advantage of you can also combo off with Restoration Angel. And because you have the Angel in the deck, you can do things like flashback a Snapcaster Mage or like rebuy a Snapcaster Mage or a Deceiver Exarch to tap something. And there's another card that's really exciting with it, and that's Pia and Kieran Nalar, or as we just call it, Key and Peele, that it's a lot easier to say, that I really want to be flickering that thing with a Restoration Angel. So I'm excited to see that and try that out in Modern.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've seen, like I said, you know, we have seen it floating around, but I think this is like really the first time in a long while that we saw the Jeskai version of Twin really... you know, lock in a great finish. It's usually Rug as adopted, or, you know, Patrick Dickman kind of forged the way on that version, or Blue Red. So it's good to see Restoration Angel back with Twin. I thought it was a really interesting list, and congrats to Alex for taking down the tournament with it.
You know, and the other thing I remember a while back, I read a Caleb Durward article on Channel Fireball where he was talking about the different splashes in Twin and what you should run. And he said you should run regular blue-red Twin if you want to play Blood Moon and you have a lot of non-basic decks like Tron in your metagame. He said you run Rug so that you can have Tarmogoyf to try and beat up on Jund. You can run Black to be running Duress Effects and Tazigur and try and get another edge against control decks if those are a lot of yours in your metagame. And you can run right of white if you just want to lose all the time. So, obviously, things have changed a little bit. I think it's on the basis of Path to Exile being a very good card right now. I think this is something I touched on in an article a few weeks ago, that Path is at a really low point in Modern in terms of its representation, but that Path to Exile, the card, is a very, very potent card in the metagame right now. But aside from the twin decks, there were three of them. I was also, and there was also Affinity. That shouldn't surprise anybody. It's still a good deck. There's also a Scapeshift deck. Now, we have been talking about Scapeshift for the past few weeks. Chaz has been following it, especially looking at its integration of Bring to Light. But instead of adding something this week, the deck dropped an entire color. Chaz, could you tell us more about that deck?
Well, like you said, Doug, we kind of been following Scapeshift for the last few weeks. It's obviously been picking up a lot of attention, and people have been playing it a lot more since the inclusion of Bring to Light, some of the fetch lands that help round out their colors, the deck's colors, rather, and even the Battle for Zendikar lands have helped in the archetype's land base to kind of ease the amount of pain you take from the mana base. So what we saw here, and it's a really great new innovation with the list. I did not see... They dropped Bring to Light entirely. They dropped blue entirely and just ran with a green red based list, and it looks great. I mean, I didn't see them. Obviously, Thian Nguyen incorporated Primeval Titan, Primal Command, Scapeshift, along with some interesting cards like Commune with Lava, Kalani Heart Expedition, and really shored up that mana base to be really kind of sleek, no pain, or not a lot of pain, rather, and incorporated 4 Cinderglade from the new Battle for Zendikar lands. And moving to the sideboard, you see Crumpled to Dust as an upgraded version of Sowing Salt against the Tron matchup. And that seems to be a lot better than just playing straight up Sowing Salt, because just not just for Tron, you can use that in a lot of different matchups if need be to really kind of mess up these greedy mana bases. So honestly, dropping the color, if you look at this list, we talked about this being a very budget list. You released an insider article, Doug. Once you get past the Scapeshift and the Primeval Titan, I mean, the mana base and a couple other cards, and that's about it. I mean, there's not really that much expensive stuff going on in this list, and it looks great. Congrats, because this was a really good way to kind of reinvent the archetype, bring it to a diverse meta in this GP from what it looked like. Even if you just look at the top 8, there's a lot of different lists rolling around, and it did really well.
Chaz, when we look at this, where are the what's the price of this deck compared to other decks, and would you consider this to be an actual budget deck for Modern?
I would say this is actually a really good budget list for Modern. I mean, there's not a lot of cards that you really need to invest in other than, like I said, Scapeshift, which chiefly will run you around $20 retail, so you're looking at about $80 in Scapeshift. Primeval Titans have been drastically depressed from their recent Modern Masters 2015 printings, so you could probably pick those up. Primeval Titan will run you about $8 to $10 each, so you're looking at $120 just from the Primeval Titan and Scapeshift. And then again, you know, fetch lands, you're only looking at Wooded Foothills, which are probably around $18 to $20, so that's another $100. A couple windswept heath. So you're looking at what, maybe a little over $300.
And a lot of that, by the way, a lot of that is in fetch lands that don't get played in Modern. So you might have a friend who is a standard player who will be able to lend you Foothills and Heaths for a weekend event. And those are certainly cards that if you have them, they're going to retain a decent amount of their value going forward as well.
So I just brought up I do have the retail in front of me. It's going to run you about $325 retail. So that's pretty good in terms of Modern.
Yeah, in terms of Modern, this is a deck I would not be embarrassed to play and bring to a tournament. I think a lot of people get steered into bad budget decks where, you know, you're not really great. This deck, if you want to start building in blue, you can do that. You look at budget decks and you think about, is this going to be a deck that can actually compete? To its downside, it appears to be a dog against Splinter Twin, which is why it has so many Rending Volleys on the sideboard. Because this deck doesn't really start doing anything until around turn 4 or turn 5. But on the upside, it has a good Jund match, and these decks historically do, and the reason why is that you have a rock-solid mana base, so you can cast all your stuff every turn, and their discard doesn't do a whole lot against you, because most Jund decks are running 4 Inquisition, 2 Thoughtseize these days, so they really only have 2 or 3 spells that matter against you. And you can peel awesome stuff. Like, if your opponent's Liliana-ing you down, you can still peel a Scapeshift right off the top and kill them. Or you can peel the Primeval Titan, cast it, get a Valakut in a mountain, or 2 Valakuts, or whatever you need to do, and kill Liliana right there if you want to. Like, the deck has a lot of come-out-of-nowhere power. And
right.
I like to see that about it.
Yeah, it definitely does have a really hard time against Twin. I could definitely see that. But it does beat up on a lot of the Jund lists and the Fair lists, because, like you said, out of nowhere, it can kind of just rip a Scapeshift off the top and win, just like Twin can. But the inclusion of, like, Commune with Lava was really awesome, too, because when you are in that kind of top deck mode, or if they do kind of strip your stuff from Thoughtseize and Inquisitions and stuff, you can just put out a huge Commune with Lava on their turn, it being an instant, and then really you get a good chance of digging deep for a Scapeshift or Primeval Titan or what have you.
And Commune with Lava is a card that I've never seen cast. Like, I was vaguely aware of its existence, and it was so far left field that I was looking at it like, does this card make this deck broken? Or like, how even good is this card in the deck? You know, when you have such little experience and contact with a card, like, I don't think it even got played in Limited.
I played it in Commander once, and it was actually extremely good. It was in a Serac Dragonclaw Commander deck, and firing it off, like, when you're in the late game or the end game. I mean, it's basically end step, sink as much mana you have into it, untap, you've basically drawn 5 or 6 cards. And like, yeah, you have to discard them all at the end of the turn, but like, I mean, you basically have a second hand to play with.
I feel like that card should have reminder text for new players. Like, you should cast this at your opponent's end step.
Yeah,
that would actually be really kind of them to add, because I know too many players were going to look at it and forget that that's what you do. Like, it's an instant for a reason.
And it's like so they dropped the blue for Bring to Light, and then they just kind of included this as a way to play either 2 extra copies of Escape Shift, 2 extra copies of a Primeval Titan. So it's really just, you know, anything you really want it to be, or you just get a bunch of value spells.
I was thinking, as a diversion on the idea of using reminder text to tell people good play styles, the only card, and listeners, write in if you can think of other reminder text that gives you actual advice. The only card I can think of is Quorum Trench Gnomes, which is from Legends, which says, tap target planes produces a colorless mana instead of planes or white mana until the end of the game. Use counters, which is both good advice for using the actual card to note it, and also good advice for being better at your Magic career is to use counters.
There you go. As far back as, Legends?
Yeah, that was Legends. I don't think we got any more advice about how to totally own your opponent since then.
Yeah, would be nice. Just
there was an old
card
where I think it had the phrase, note that. And I forget what card it was, but it was like the Hive or something from like the original set. Something like, note that the lock tokens can be killed individually and things like that. So it was like, just be aware, opponent, that you don't have to kill them all at once. You can kill them as individuals. And like, they stopped printing wordings like that when they standardized things. But I think reminder text that, you know, helps you just make better game decisions is something that they could consider, even though they probably never will.
Yeah. So Doug, looking at the top 8, there are a few questions I think all of us should ask ourselves, even, you know, just in this cast, that we will try to answer for listeners and just the listeners themselves. So the top 8, you know, barring there are 3 twin lists in there, is this a diverse top 8 to you, someone who follows Modern quite a bit? And does Bloom Titan really need to go?
Well, a couple weeks ago, I did the top 8 breakdown of all the regional PTQs in North America and Japan, and that was reported and posted for our insiders. The top decks at that time were, and this is basically the same numbers of each, Affinity, Twin, Jund, Burn. So looking at this top 8, I think, yes, it's a representative top 8 of the metagame. As I said at the top, I'm glad to see that Twin is present, because Twin is kind of a canary in a coal mine about a healthy format. It helps keep the more degenerate stuff down. It is a combo deck that is about as fair as a combo deck has ever been in Magic. It's certainly a very good deck, but it is not a busted combo deck. You can, you know, lay out all the reasons. We won't go through that right now. What's not there? We don't see Red Green Tron. We don't see Bloom Titan, and we don't see Jund. We do not have the metagame breakdown yet, so I don't know how common those decks were on day 2. Unfortunately, Wizards website for the past few hours has been a problem, so we couldn't review the deck list in 9th place seconds. But I'm pretty sure 9th place was a Bloom Titan deck. So those decks were nipping at the heels. And I have been on the side that Bloom Titan is a little bit too good for a long time now. It is a resilient deck in the hands of people who know what they are doing. And it can kill you in ways that you thought you had the game locked up, and then they start to do things. I had one game where I was playing locally, and I had cast Stone Rain against a Bloom Titan deck literal 7 times in a row. 7 turns, 7 Stone Rains. And I still got killed because they had 3 Amulet of Vigor and were able to use Simic Growth Chamber and 3 triggers to make 6 mana, cast a Titan, and then go off on a turn that eventually ended up with me being attacked with 3 Primeval Titans and dying. That sucks. That's really hard to beat in Modern. I was playing Grixis, and that is a deck that has Terminates, it has counterspells, it has lots of ways to stop this stuff, but 7 actual Stone Rains could not stop that deck. And I'm not trying to salt here. I kind of think it's impressive how that deck still won through. But it's a very potent deck, And if it does not go by the time of Pro Tour Atlanta, which will be a modern format Pro Tour with Oath of the Gatewatch, I assume that we will be seeing a lot of it, and it is not a fun deck to watch people play, and it is not a, I mean, like, it's not a fun deck for coverage, it's not a fun deck to play against. It's had a good run, it's cool to see that people can, what they can do with it, with the modern card pool, but I think a turn two Primeval Titan that is attacking you is a little bit too fast for the format.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you wouldn't think that it wasn't fun for coverage, because that's basically all they put on the feature matches for the GP, so that was kind of not fun to watch every time. Even, like, I think there was, like, a good string of, like, three... Wait, they played it for the feature match, then they played it for these new time-lapsed rounds that they do now. And
I'm glad we had those, by the way.
Yeah, those actually were really good, except, like, again, this one string of, like, three Bloom Titan in a row. It was just not fun, but kudos to the time-shifted matches for coverage now. Kind of really breaks up, or it fills the void of, like, a lot of dead space to look at another matchup when an X matchup goes only, you know, not a lot of time, doesn't take a lot of time.
And
but,
go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, I think... You know, there's always two things to when you have to finally ban something in these formats, and Wizards has made this pretty clear that the main two that they look at is meta dominance, which I don't really think we have here in
we do not in
Bloom Titan, right? It's not a dominant. It's not like Pod where it's just taking over the meta. It's a dominant percentage of the meta and really just kind of wins almost every event. This is more leans to what they said about they don't want decks to do degenerate things in the format. And what you said, Doug, is pretty much degenerate. They really don't want Primeval Titan out on turn two and turn three because there's not really much you can do about it. Sitting across the table, I mean, if you have a hasted Titan on like turn three on the back of the Stronghold, I mean, there's not really anything you can do about it. You pretty much just lose. Even kind of Marshall Sutcliffe said, I remember vaguely you said on camera that, it's very rare that you see someone, win once they even cast Primeval Titan, let alone just having the Titan stick around. So it's just, the deck is doing degenerate things and it's probably close to its time, to get banned. So they're going to do something and it's just getting closer to that time. So
if we look at why there's coverage, it's to drive an interest in the format. That's why Wizards does it. So a lot of people still aren't even familiar with Bloom Titan, which is baffling to us because we play Modern, we talk about it, but a lot of people aren't familiar with the deck. So I think you have two different kinds of people who tune into coverage who are unfamiliar with it. I mean, first of all, there's that thing about you're looking at like a really well-crafted machine and it's like, wow, that's cool. If any one of those cards wasn't in that deck, like if Slayer's Stronghold didn't exist, this deck would be worse. It makes use of every part of Modern, which is awesome. But then you have the people who look at it and think, you know, maybe they've been playing for a while or maybe they've been looking at it and they think, you know, why would I bother investing in, say, Snapcaster Mages and Scalding Tarns or Tarmogoyfs when I play against this deck? There's no way to beat it for a lot of lists. The deck only loses to the card Blood Moon and the deck Affinity regularly. Those are its real only threats, along with the Craig Wesco deck. Where you're saying, why should I buy into this format when it's full of combo? And that's what eventually killed off Extended, was people got into the Thopter Depths era, and it just, like, facing down a Merit Lodge token on turn two sucked. And the only thing worse than that was facing it down on turn one, which was something also that deck could do. Those aren't enjoyable things to be playing against, and I don't know that they're healthy for the modern format.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. When I think back on Extended, that did happen a lot. Hold on, I'm getting huge. Kelly.
Yeah. Somebody's drag racing in Kelly's background.
I'm literally next to a racetrack. Cool. I opened the window, so I'll go ahead and close that and move away from it.
Yeah. That's great.
It's like watching Mario Kart out there.
Are we good? Or?
Yeah, you tell me.
Seems to be better.
We're good now.
So where was I? Yeah, Doug, you made great points. I actually do kind of remember that that time and extended where it just got the format got too degenerate. It rotated too often. It was like kind of riddled with combo, and it just wasn't fun after a while. And they kind of alleviated that, obviously, with making Modern, but they want to make it as diverse as possible, where a lot of archetypes are actually there are a lot of archetypes in Modern. I mean, not any one archetype is taking up a large chunk of the format. I know you did that analysis, and there were a few that, you know, do hold a commanding lead, but it's not, they're represented, but they're not dominating. Like, any archetype can do well in Modern, but this Bloom Titan list is just doing things that Wizards just doesn't want. They don't want X things happening before, you know, turn four, ideally, and this list, or this archetype, regularly breaks that rule. And I think when it's doing it enough times, you know, if you were to say, oh, well, you know, the Titan doesn't really come out that often, it would be interesting to get the percentages on that, but I think just too much, too often is the mantra of getting rid of Bloom Titan.
If we're looking at a card to eliminate, you know, a lot of people look at Amulet of Vigor or Summer Bloom, and I think that those are good candidates. But the other card that came up that a friend pointed out was that Primeval Titan has never been used to do anything fair in its entire printing. So Primeval Titan is a card that could go, and you'd still have basically a Hive Mind combo deck left over. I'm fine with that. I think that you're much less frequently you're assembling Hive Mind on turn two with the appropriate pack to fire it off. So I guess I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I think Titan can stay. I think it's an extremely powerful card. Let's not like discount that at all. But you know, when it's getting played like way before it should be, I think it's even worse. And you're right. I think if it's toned down a little bit where you get rid of the Amulet or Summer Bloom or both, it's a little better. Like, obviously the Scapeshift list was running Primeval Titan. I think that's definitely a lot more tolerable and fair than what Bloom Titan's able to do on a more regular basis.
If you look at cards that have been the problem in the past in decks that get banned, they're generally narrow corner case cards being abused with other cards that haven't been tested with it in its original environment. So in this case, the lands from Ravnica block that make two mana were never designed with Amulet of Vigor in mind, and vice versa. So that card doesn't actually do anything outside of a combo deck. Primeval Titan is like a valid card. It's very powerful, but it's also six mana. The only reason it's unfair in that deck is you can get it out so quickly. So if you're banning a card from the deck, aside, you know, the merits of doing the actual banning aside, I think the only real candidate is the one mana corner case artifact that serves as nothing else in the format but to be a combo engine. Without that, the deck is nothing, and there's still plenty of decks that can use Primeval Titan and things like Scapeshift to create powerful combo-based, land-based interactions, but without Amulet, they stop being these insane turn two Primeval Titan decks, which, again, sounds like the kind of power level they want to keep out of the Modern format.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question, just as we keep dissecting this top eight. We'll have kind of our financial take towards the end to wrap things up. But I ask you guys a question because everyone's kind of all eyes on Jace Vryn's Prodigy in terms of what it does in Modern, and obviously pertaining that to its price tag. And, you know, I see it getting pointed out a lot, you know, oh, Jace is doing X thing, Jace is doing X thing. But let me ask you guys, because I saw, you know, some of the coverage throughout the day. I saw it on camera. I saw it in the top eight. I only ever really see Jace Vryn's Prodigy in this Grixis control list. I hardly ever see it outside of that particular list to any huge success. You know, I keep going back to the thing I always say, where it's just another good card in Modern. And obviously it does good things, but like when you compare it to Snapcaster Mage, obviously each card has its pros and cons, but you know, Jace is always really ever going to be a reactive card. And in Modern, I don't know, like, obviously that's good enough in Modern right now, but you know, you're never going to be able to do what Snapcaster does, and you're never going to be able to reactively do anything with Jace's flips, you know, the Planeswalker side. So I just want to say, like, you know, I've been leaning towards Jace, you know, falling off a good amount once it rotates out of Standard, because, I mean, what's really just another good card in Modern? Is that really worth the price tag worth paying for it in the future.
You said that he can't do anything reactive, but...
Caster Mage is just a very aggressive card. It's a 2-power creature for 2 mana. It's got flash, so it acts like a combat trick and kind of has pseudo-haste. And yes, you can use things like Remand to get extra card advantage with it. But I think that we're falling into the trap of comparing Painseer to Dark Confidant here. They're different cards, despite having very similar abilities. The actual only similarity between the two cards is the fact that Jace has one mode that does what Snapcaster Mage does. But because you can only activate it on your turn, even comparing that to Snapcaster Mage isn't analogous. So I think what we should look at here is we should evaluate how good is Snapcaster Mage because he can buy back Lightning Bolt. And I think that's an interaction worth building around. And since Lightning Bolt is such a cheap way to get tons of damage when you start casting it 4 or 5 times a game as opposed to 1 or 2, you start thinking like, well, what else? Like Lightning Bolt has a ton of value for its mana cost, things like Lightning Helix. Belong in a control deck where you want to be remanding there and mana leaking or whatever their spells. But Jace can go into a comboed style deck where you can keep recasting your Serum Vision. And then don't forget, he's also got the ability to filter your draws, help you find things. He can set up miracles sometimes. He's just so much more versatile than Snapcaster Mage, and it's a much more defensive card. It's a 0-2 body, not a 2-1. His +1 ability helps keep him alive and helps keep you in a game that you might be... You know, it helps mitigate the damage you might have taken from Shocklands. So I think we look at the fact that he can recur cards like proactive, offensive, damaging spells like Lightning Bolt and Helix, and card draw spells like your Serum Visions and things like that. And you evaluate the power of him in a shell where that's your major mode of interaction, as opposed to a defensive shell where Snapcaster Mage is involved. So all his abilities together mean that I wouldn't evaluate him just like Snapcaster. I would say it's probably worth playing them both in the same deck because you have a tremendous amount of ability to rebuy. If you cast every spell in your deck twice, I mean, you're probably going to win the game, especially if that spell is doing 3 damage to someone.
Right, yeah, I totally understand, and you bring up good points. I'm just not, like, saying a one-for-one comparison, because obviously, like you said, Kelly, these cards are played harmoniously in the same deck. There's room for, you know, more than one Sheriff. So... You know, what I'm just saying is, I think it's just going to be defaulted to just another good card in Modern that does good things. And does that really necessarily mean it's going to hold its price, it's going to drastically drop off? Because it does do good things, but it does have a really good, like, it does have a kind of a big barrier where, you know, sometimes being reactive is a big drawback. Not being able to react is a big drawback. Especially in Modern, where you're, you know, not a lot of control decks really thrive, and the way they do thrive is having that, obviously, the Snapcaster Mage to pick up the slack and be reactive. So, I don't know, I guess, you know, it's a mythic from a core set, it's not really open that much, but, you know, you look at Snapcaster Mage, which is played in a vast amount more of archetypes, so I guess really what I was trying to compare was the price tags, you know, I don't know, like, what does this price tag stick for just another good card in Modern? Because there's plenty of good cards in Modern.
Probably not, but it has to be, well, let's look at it compared to something like Liliana of the Veil, because it has to be on that level to maintain its current price tag after it leaves Standard. If it's as good in Modern as something like Liliana of the Veil, then there's no reason that it should be worth less. But if it's only okay in Modern, it's scarce enough. Its demand is going to remain high for, you know, the duration of Standard, so it's entirely feasible. I mean, I wouldn't bet that it would go higher because of Modern anytime soon, but, like, it's possible. Again, I think that if you're talking from a sheer investment standpoint, you can do better with your money in other places. But if you're a player and you intend to play Modern and you've got Jace's now and you're playing him now, I mean, you probably got them for less than you paid, so just be happy that you have the game pieces utility for the next year. And if you don't think he's going to be good in Modern, you can sell him and then maybe rebuy him when he's a little cheaper. But it's possible. He's a mythic rare. He's the best mythic rare in a short printed set that wasn't really drafted very much, that's dominant and Standard. It's got all the making for it, as much as I hate to admit it.
Yeah, what do you think, Doug? Because, again, we keep seeing this card crop up in the, you know, specifically the Grixis control list. And the archetype, you know, definitely has, you know, generated a lot more interest and is putting up a lot better results recently.
I think that Jace is inversely proportional to how good Remand is. And we have not seen Blue, White, Red. I mean, obviously Remand is good in Splinter Twin, but we haven't seen Blue, White, Red control really anywhere for a very long time. Jace is not good in decks that rely on countering things to control the game. And this is, you know, you can see this in the Grixis deck. It has a grand total of zero counter spells in the main deck. Sideboard has three dispels and one spell snare, but there's no Remand. There's no Cryptic Command or anything like that. It's just relying on Inquisition of Kozilek. Jace is very good for that. And this sounds like a dumb thing to admit or to even say, but I hadn't realized until I played with Jace that you don't have to pay mana to use Jace the turn you want to flash back the spell. So if I want to cast Inquisition of Kozilek, I have to pay black for it and then one and a blue for Snapcaster Mage. But if I want to use Jace on it, all I have to do is play the black, which means that I have mana for a Snapcaster Mage on something else. Or I can cast Determinate that turn, or I can hold up, I can play a tapped land, like a Creeping Tar Pit. And that's really interesting. That's something that I'm almost ashamed to admit it took actually playing with the card to realize, but Jace works a lot differently than Snapcaster. It sucks that you have to keep rolling him up to get more of the effect, but I have been really surprised by him. The Grixis control deck always has a spell for Jace to cast, and if it doesn't have a spell for him to cast, it has a Thought Scour for him to cast, and then you can draw into a spell for him to cast. I think, Chaz, your evaluation of is this another... Yeah, it is just going to be another good card in Modern. I see Jace settling at, let's say, $20, $25 post-rotation. And the reason why is that it is not as good in the blue-white-red control decks, because you're not trying to run out Cryptic Command, Mana Leak, Negate, Snapcaster Mage on those. All you're trying to do is manage an opponent's hand with Inquisition, use Terminates, and then try and stick a Tazaker. I also thought it was interesting that the Grixis player had four Colgan's Command in his main deck, and that is a brutal amount. That means that you get to run only a few actual kill creatures, and you can typically strip out an opponent's path to exile before they're actually going to be using it against you. So you can use that to rebuy Pia and Kieran or Tazaker as much as you want. And I thought that that was gutsy, but it makes sense because if you are playing against an opponent, you can do something like a Colgan's Command on their turn, take out a card, burn them for two, your turn, use Jace, get another card, burn them for another two. You can run somebody out of their hand really quickly, and then you're going to be able to buy back everything. I mean, the deck was sick. He had four Fulminator Mage on the sideboard, so against a lot of decks, you can shove those things in, and then every Colgan's Command turns into a rebuy on your Stone Rain. It's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I just figured I'd ask you guys the question because obviously a lot of eyes are on the card, and, you know, we have talked about it a lot, but, you know, finally, you know, this Grixis list definitely did well. It made the top eight, and it is a good list in Modern right now. It definitely got a lot more attention, and it's putting up better results, so figured we spend some time talking about it.
Yeah, and people are wondering, you know, should you hold your Jace, should you sell them? And Jace is seeing less play in Standard now, as Abzan continues to just do what it does, and it is only seeing fringe play in Modern. And it is a good card, but it is a card that I think is best when you have Inquisition of Kozilek in your deck. And whether that means it's going to be alongside Tarmogoyfs in a bug deck, or whether it's going to continue to be in a Grixis shell, I suppose we'll see on that. But Jace is only getting played in one deck, and he's not getting played in combo decks, and he's also finally not getting played so that you can run him up to his ultimate and kill people that way. He's just there to flashback spells and every now and then loot. So, good card, but not a great financial hold after he rotates.
Yeah. So, I guess, you know, we kind of wanted to wrap up with kind of like a financial take on just the top eight. Where do we see things going forward? I know you have these in the show notes, Doug, so I guess we can kind of end with that. I mean, Brian DeMars wrote a really good insider article. You did as well. And I agree with a lot of what you guys have said. I mentioned them in my article. You know, as the spreads get lower, I'm really liking cards like Steel Overseer. Obviously, you saw Affinity doing really good things. Splinter Twin didn't go anywhere. And obviously, Scapeshift got there. I mean, we've talked about the card, talked about Scapeshift, and it definitely seems that people are doing more things with Scapeshift in Modern now. with the inclusion of the new with having wooded foothills. It never had wooded foothills before. It has Cinderglade now, so it's really cool. I like those three. Those three are definitely cards I'd want to be owning.
Absolutely.
For inventory or whatever.
You had also popped out a promo idea for people who are looking to speculate on some foils.
Yeah, actually, you're right. I almost forgot about it, but it looks like Pia and Kieran Noir, specifically the promo version from the intro pack, is very scarce online, and I don't know if that has always been a thing or just happened recently, but yeah, if you want the promo version, there's not a lot of them out there that I saw just this morning. So again, I haven't checked ever before that, so I don't know if that's something that's been a thing or if it just happened recently, but keep a lookout on the intro pack foils specifically, because they have an alternate art. And one that I think is actually really good.
Yeah, the art's pretty cool. Well, we have talked today about the Grand Prix Top 8 and whether Modern is a healthy format. I think so. We think so. We talked about a cool deck that could be possibly, I hate to say it, a budget deck in Modern. We went over whether Jace was a good pickup, and then we hit on a couple finance picks at the end. So, if you would like to get a hold of us, you can find all of us on Twitter. You can also leave us, I think this is pretty cool, you can leave us a voicemail message. You don't even need a phone, you just need a computer with a microphone. Head over to quietspeculation.com/QSCast, spell it like you think it's spelled. You'll be able to leave us a minute and a half voicemail. Tell us your finance question, give us some feedback or commentary. If it's good, if it's cool, or if you're funny, we will play it on the show. You can also get a hold of us by leaving a comment on whatever page you found this post on, either MTGCast or Quiet Speculation if you're an insider and you saw it early. You can also find us on Twitter. You can reach us at QuietSpec. And Chaz, what is your Twitter?
That's at ChazVMTG.
And Kelly, tell us your really imaginative Twitter name.
It took me a while to come up with it, but I settled on my Twitter handle being Kelly Reed.
And that's R-E-I-D. So until next week, I'm Doug.
I'm still Kelly.
I'm Chaz.
And you've been listening to QSCast.